The Green Bay Packers lost 38-8 in the desert against the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday and now must deal with the fallout from reports of allegations of drug use from a report by Al Jazeera. We're going to talk about that with Evan Western of Acme Packing Company. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're recapping a loss to the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday. We're talking about drug allegations. So I don't know if it's a good morning, but it's a morning. We have us joining us on the phone this morning, a guest.
Expert interview.
Evan Western of Acme Packing Company to kind of talk through all this stuff. How you doing this morning, Evan?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. I've certainly been better after that awful game last night. And yeah, these reports involving a few of these Packers linebackers. It's an interesting morning to wake up to and I kind of feel a little despondent for the Packers fan today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what else to say. It's not good. In your opinion, Evan, what is the number one thing wrong with this team right now after watching yesterday's game?
Well, I think it's kind of what we've been talking about all season long, and it's the wide receiver's inability to separate from coverage. It seems to me that that's really having a cascade effect. Because obviously, you know, the main effect of that is Aaron Rodgers doesn't have open guys to throw to. But, you know, there's so many things that come out of that as a result of it. There's the defense, you know, strictly playing man coverage and putting an eighth guy in the box, and then that limits your running game's ability to be productive. And then if your run game can't be productive, you can't get out of that eight-man box and get the defenses into zone coverage and open up things for receivers. So it's just kind of a vicious cycle that all kind of spills out because of this inability of these receivers to get separation. The other thing too that strikes me is it seems like the play callers aren't really willing to add in extra blockers, especially when, you know, last night when the Packers were down two tackles, they didn't really give Josh Walker a whole lot of help on the right side. And I think a little part of that is also, again, because you've got receivers who can't get separation. You can't trust them to win one-on-one battles down the field. And so you're trying to get guys out there instead of keeping extra blockers in.
Yeah, it's a sink or swim mentality that they seem to have with the offensive tackles, dating back to when Don Barclay was, you know, starting in place of Brian Bulaga earlier in the season. They did the same thing too, just kind of left him on an island. And sometimes he did okay, and other times he looked, you know, just as bad as he did yesterday. How much blame do you place on the offensive line for yesterday's loss? Because it's not like the Packers had their starting tackles in the game.
Yeah, it's really tough to blame these guys when you've got a guy like Barclay who's starting at left tackle, coming off an ACL. He still doesn't look right to me like he did a couple years ago when he filled in so well for Bulaga on the right side. And then obviously, yeah, you get Walker plugging in at right tackle and Bulaga goes down and all the other starters are showing up on the injury report too. So it's really difficult to blame these guys for the struggles. And certainly the guards didn't particularly play well either, but, I imagine that, you know, chemistry is so big on the offensive line and when you're playing next to guys that you're not used to, that also affects your own performance. So it's tough to really, to blame them individually for the performance, but, I think I would have liked to have seen a little more help for the tackles, but it's tough when you don't have receivers that can win downfield.
Aaron Rodgers had three fumbles, lost two of them, and threw an interception. But how can you evaluate him playing behind an offensive line that allowed eight sacks on the quarterback and nine if you count the one on Scott Tolzien?
I think that's the way to evaluate him is you look at the same kinds of issues that he's had all season long, especially in these last several weeks. He's holding the ball too long on occasion. He's not accurate with a lot of his throws, and some of that is certainly due to the line, but you've been seeing these same sorts of issues for a few weeks now. And so it's been frustrating to watch, and certainly he's not playing at his best. And again, you've got the receivers that are part of that. You've got the line that's part of that. You've got some issues apparently with play calling that might be part of that too. So, you know, all of it, it's a struggle to watch a player of his caliber, knowing what he's capable of, just not live up to his potential right now.
You mentioned some play calling issues. There seems to be this uneasy tension between Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy that's lasted for several weeks. Where are you at in the job Mike McCarthy's done as a play caller? Is it anything? Can we attribute any of it to, you know, just simply failures in execution?
Yeah, I think the thing that I was struggling with yesterday was it seemed like once we got down two scores, he just gave up on the run in the second quarter, and didn't really get back to it again until into the second half, and that's frustrating to me because it seems to me, and again, I don't pretend to know any more, certainly know nearly as much about football as a guy like McCarthy does, but it seems to me like that's the way this team has to win games, is sticking with the run, developing an effective run game. And then again, getting the defenses out of that man coverage. And when you don't give your running game opportunities to do that, they seem to struggle. And then, you look back to the Dallas game, that first game when he took over, that running game was on point and the offensive line was doing a great job of opening holes for him. And then the last couple of games, it just hasn't worked out that way. And I think it's a combination of both, isn't it? He's not necessarily willing to stick with it, but the reason he's not sticking with it is because they're not being effective and they're not moving the ball and they're not opening holes for Lacy and Starks.
We're talking to Evan Western of Acme Packing Company, part of the SB Nation Network, here on Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Evan, what was your impression of the Packers' defense on Sunday? Because two of the touchdowns the Packers gave up were actually defensive scores by the Cardinals. So it wasn't as if the Packers defense gave up 38 points.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was looking at the stats for the last two games, and the performance as far as yards and turnovers against Oakland and Arizona were almost identical. About 250 passing yards given up, 120 rushing or so, and two turnovers. And that one by, that pick by Daniels seemed like it was really going to kind of turn the tide and turn the momentum back in their favor, and obviously the offense just fell flat on it. But, in past years, that kind of a performance and giving up 24 points against a good team, probably enough to get to give the offense some room to maneuver and room to, potentially get out and win that game. And so I'm not necessarily disappointed with the unit as a whole. There were a couple of players who really seemed to struggle. Jake Ryan in particular had some tackling issues and seemed like he was really struggling, but certainly Daniels had a good game. Morgan Burnett looked good. There were individual performances that were pretty solid, and overall as a unit, they did enough to at least give the offense a chance to do something. But obviously with the offense being the unit it is this year, that just unfortunately wasn't enough this week against a really, really good Arizona team.
Is that your silver lining, or is it the turnovers the Packers forced? They did have two, albeit one was kind of in the fourth quarter. Was it the play of the special teams? What can we feel positive about after this performance?
Yeah, the special teams look good, and I think you look at a guy like Rick Lovato coming in and looked like he was accurate on all his snaps. I didn't see anything that was discouraging from him, so that's certainly a nice little plus to take away. But Tim Apte looked pretty good, too, as well, and the coverage teams were doing a good job. So I'd probably look over to the special teams as being the highlight of the game, if there is one.
Yeah, it's unfortunate when we're talking about the long snapper that that's the highlight, one of the highlights of the game. Although I will say, just in general, how good the Packers special teams has been this year. That has been a nice turnaround from a year ago. Unfortunately, it's the other way with the offense, but at least Zook, Ron Zook has done a good job. Evan, it's been announced the Packers Viking game has been flexed to Sunday night for week 17 with the fate of the NFC North at stake. Despite all the Packers struggles, is this a team that can still win the division next week?
I think again, it all comes down to the running game. If they can rip off, maybe 120, 140 yards on the ground against that Minnesota defense, that's going to open things up for the passing game, and that's gonna be the recipe to getting the win. I think they're capable of doing it. They certainly did it the first time they played Minnesota up in Minneapolis a couple weeks back. That was Lacy's first big game at the end of the year, and where he seemed to kind of feel like he was going to bounce back and down the stretch. And so I think if the running game plays like it did that week, I think this team definitely has a chance. It's funny because at one point I thought that getting a fifth seed, and getting the wild card and getting matched up with whoever won the NFC East was going to be a good option rather than having to try to beat Minnesota three times in 1 year and probably two times in a row. But, with the way Washington's been playing, I don't know that that's any better of an option at this point because Kirk Cousins is just playing phenomenal football, and that team looks like it's suddenly kind of dangerous as well. So whatever first round matchup the Packers get, it's going to be tough and it's going to be an interesting matchup. But yeah, I think it all boils down to the running game here at this point. The defense is going to do what it's going to do, give up somewhere in the 300, 350 yard range and hopefully get a turnover or two. It's on the running game to make sure that the offense is able to capitalize.
Yeah, I think the Packers have to pray they win this game so they get the home game during the playoffs, because going on the road against anybody at this point doesn't look too good to me. It kind of doesn't have anything to do with the game yesterday, but what's your take on all these doping allegations from the Al Jazeera report against Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Mike Neal, in addition to Peyton Manning? What do you make of this whole thing, Evan?
The whole thing is just bizarre, and the allegations from this Charlie Sly guy who it sounds like the made up informant in a mafia movie or something, but it's just bizarre that he's kind of throwing these names out here, and then all of a sudden, as soon as this report comes out, he recants everything and is pulling back his comments. So I'm really having trouble kind of piecing everything together. But combined with with how staunchly all the players involved from Matthews and Peppers, all the way down to Peyton Manning, with how staunchly they're defending themselves and denying these allegations, and with the guy who's mentioned their names himself recanting his comments, I don't know that I'm necessarily putting a whole lot of stock in this. Now, certainly with a guy like Ryan Braun, we've seen something like this before and gotten burned by it, but it's easy to get a little baited that way. But there are enough questions around this whole thing that something just doesn't add up to me, and I'm not going to be concerned about this report affecting these guys and about anything happening and turning out to be true until there's some more evidence.
Yeah, more does need to be learned. I agree with that. Although, tell you the truth, I'm inclined to believe it. I'm going to expound more on that a little bit later. I still don't know if anything will come of it, just because it's the end of the season. These guys might be gone at the end of the season. And I don't even know if taking a painkiller is even, there's just so many questions we need to find out here. But Evan, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I wish it was under better circumstances. Maybe next time we can talk about a win instead. But appreciate you coming back on the show, and we'll do it again sometime.
No problem. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me and agree. I'll drink to that. Let's do it after a win sometime.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Take care, Evan. Evan Western of Acme Packing Company, our second guest in a row from Acme Packing Company, following in the footsteps of Paul Noonan, our last show before the holidays. or before Christmas at least. Thanks to Evan for joining us today. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers yesterday, just to jump the jumping off point here on the drug allegations from an Al Jazeera report and my two cents on it. Just, you know, I mentioned before that I'm inclined to believe it, and I kind of want to go into why. I mean, we've seen this too many times now, as Evan said, with Ryan Braun. If you're a follower of Wisconsin sports, as I'm sure many of you listening to the show are, with the Milwaukee Brewers outfielder, denying everything, and then it comes out later that he himself was the liar. I mean, we've seen this with Lance Armstrong. We've seen this with Rafael Palmeiro, several other athletes. I watched the whole report last night. It's up online. You didn't have to catch it live or anything like that. You can go right to YouTube and watch the whole, you know, it's about a 45 to 50 minute video. I think this stuff, this guy just knew a little bit too much to be making it all up. I mean, I'm not saying everything out there is 100% true and accurate. There's certainly, he kind of seemed like the kind of guy, he's got all these connections and maybe he's bragging some of them up a little bit. But the fact that, you know, there's also one other athlete that was shown to be going and getting these drugs, the outfielder Teagarden from the Chicago Cubs, that kind of lent a little bit of credence to it. And, I mean, the stuff they were talking about with the Green Bay Packers, had you told me prior to yesterday, okay, three Green Bay Packers are going to get caught for, you know, some sort of performance enhancing or not, get caught up in some drug allegations. And I know with Matthews, it wasn't necessarily with the performance enhancing drugs. Those three names might've been at the top of the list, especially, you know, two of them, Mike Neal and Julius Peppers, have already been suspended by the NFL for violating the substance abuse policy. And we're talking a long time ago with Julius Peppers. We're talking his first season in the NFL with Mike Neal. It wasn't all that long ago, 2012. And that circumstance under Mike Neal was really weird. You know, Mike Neal said he got suspended for using Adderall in 2012. And Mike Neal can say whatever the heck he wants because the NFL doesn't comment on it. And that's kind of weird. And I think that there's been talks about the NFL's drug policy changing where these guys cannot do it. The NFL will, I don't know if they've actually done this yet, but they cannot say they took something. And then, you know, the NFL will eventually comment if that's found out to be the case or something like that. But anyway, this was before there were any rules about that. So I don't know how much I actually believe Mike Neal. And unfortunate as it, I'm just like, I think 95% of people, I want to believe Peyton Manning. I want to believe Clay Matthews and Mike Neal and Julius Peppers. But I'm not sure I do. I've been burned too many times before, and these, all the things they talk about, they seem to be really close. You know, they talked about Mike Neal, just some detached person, talking about making the, you know, the move from defensive lineman to linebacker and the weight loss and all those kind of things. And they knew an awful lot about him, to just be making this stuff out of thin air. And you know, for a guy who's already violated the substance abuse policy, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot to you know, believe in their side of these the denials as well. This all being said, the burden of proof may be too big to overcome. these guys are not getting caught by the NFL's drug policy because they know when they're going to be tested, so they can stop doing it whenever they do that. And otherwise, it's got to leave a paper trail. And if you watch the video, they talk about how these doctors can delete documents easily. And, you know, I don't know if there will ever be anything that comes out of, you know, some paper trail to prove all this. It's not surprising to me that everybody's denying it, even this Charlie Sly guy. He could face jail time if it ends up being true. So, you know, of course, why not, you know, keep your innocence for as long as possible? And unless there's any proof, like, you know, innocent till proven guilty. And I don't know if there will ever end up being anything, you know, enough to, you know, incriminate these guys. I don't even know if this Delta 2, that's what Julius Peppers and Mike Neal are accused of acquiring, is this Delta 2. It's not on the NFL's banned substance list. It is not an anabolic steroid. It's, from everything I've heard, I've read, it's steroid-like. I don't know where that falls on the spectrum, whether that's, you know, kind of covered in the NFL's, you know, performance PED policy, substance abuse policy. So I don't know if they even if all the allegations are true, I don't know if they violated anything or not with these painkillers. I don't, you know, that's what Clay Matthews is, you know, alleged to have gotten or have inquired about or both. It, you know, does it have to be prescribed through a team doctor? I don't know that is either. So there are a lot of questions here that have yet to be answered. So even if they all are true, I still don't know if anything's going to come of it. I really don't. And the fact that, you know, the Packers only got to get through a few more weeks here, it seems like this will be an investigation that will take some time. You know, Mike Neal and Julius Peppers, the Packers could very easily get rid of them. You know, Mike Neal's a free agent at season's end. Julius Peppers has a contract that, you know, is very, could very easily be terminated by the Packers, and they wouldn't have to pay him. They'd have to, you know, there's some amount of guaranteed money there, but it's nothing that they couldn't absorb, at least. So what will come of this? What will impact the Packers? I'm not sure. It may end up being very little, but it's an interesting case, and this is going to be something I think that's going to get a whole lot of attention from here on out. So, you know, Al Jazeera is as much a credible news outlet as any other cable news outlet, Fox News, CNN. You know, no, it's, if you're going to believe something from them or ABC, NBC, any, if you're going to read 24/7 Sports, where this show is hosted, we are no more or less credible than Al Jazeera. You know, that's the fact of the matter. I mean, they're not PBS. If that's your standard and that's the only thing you're going to believe, well, I can't help you then. They're probably held to a higher standard than maybe other news outlets, but, you know, apart from that, I'm not sure. But if you want to get away from drug allegations and talk a little bit of football here, getting back into our usual post game, the day after the game, we use our chips report at 24/7 Sports as kind of a roadmap for yesterday's game. I'll get back into a little bit about that. I almost feel weird talking about the chips report in that, you know, you go over the blue chips and the red chips, and these are the good players to come out of the game. And there wasn't a whole lot of good performances yesterday. It's almost a little bit weird to talk about something good. But if we were to find the best Packers players on the team yesterday, the ones I came away with were defensive lineman Mike Daniels, who, of course, had, you know, probably the play of the game for the Packers. The interception on a screen pass in which he was in perfect position, played it perfectly. Not only that, he made two tackles. I think one went for a loss, one went for no gain. You know, here's a guy who is dealing with a hamstring issue, limited in practice leading up to the game. And Mike, and then his teammate, BJ Raji, exits the game. So Mike Daniels has got to play an even bigger role. Everybody on the defensive line does. Well, Well, Raji is out because he's left with the concussion early. So Mike Daniels plays great. This is exactly why the Packers gave him the $41 million contract extension 2 weeks ago. He was not the reason the Packers lost, even if there were times where maybe the holes were a little bit too big against the run or things like that. Mike Daniels more than made up for it. I thought the same with Morgan Burnett. He may have missed a tackle or two out there, but he was also...
Packers news of the day.
Sorry about that, folks. Did not mean to do that. Morgan Burnett, he came away with a fourth quarter fumble recovery, albeit that was while the game was already in the bag for the Cardinals. But I thought the big play for him was the breakup at the goal line. It was third and one, and the Cardinals are you know, threatening, knocking on the door of the end zone. And Morgan Burnett times up a hit just as the ball arrives to Cardinals running back David Johnson. There's Burnett to jar the ball loose. It falls incomplete. The Packers hold the Cardinals to a field goal, so it goes, you know, it was a 7-0 game at the time that goes on to 10-0. It kept the Packers in the game at the moment. Morgan Burnett made a team-leading 10 tackles. One of them was for a loss. I thought he did very well on Sunday. And if we talk about the red chips, got another defensive lineman, Mike Pennell, may have been the best game of his young career. He's only a second-year player, but he got his first career sack, was really impressive. He threw the offensive lineman out of the way, ended up tripping up Cardinals quarterback Carson Palmer, ended up going for no gain. But Pennell gets his first career sack. Later on in the game, he forces a fumble, the one recovered by Morgan Burnett. So just a really good job there. And again, having to play an extra, you know, a larger role with B.J. Raji out, good job by Mike Pennell. He's somebody that, you know, kind of has a little bit of a bright future with the Packers organization. I think he's setting himself up well to stick with this team. And you know, his role has only grown, you know, from the day he, you know, stuck with the Packers, made their roster. He's gone from just a bit contributor. Some days he hasn't even been active during his first year in the NFL, and just growing and becoming better all the time. That's really nice to see. And then punter Tim Mastay for executing the fake punt, which was, you know, one of the highlights of the season for the Packers special teams. It was just executed perfectly. The blocking from Chris Banjo and company up front was great. And not only that, he did a really good job punting the ball on six punts. Two of them were pinned inside the 20. He averaged over 40 net yards per punt. Really good job, and really been about a good month for Tim Mastay. Really good. So there's that to like about his performance. And yeah, he's doing really, really well. Tim Mastay is. Now for the bad. Your cow chip performances from Sunday's game against the Cardinals, starting with the backup tackles. We're talking about both Don Barclay and especially Josh Walker. You know, David Bakhtiari missed the first game of his career. If you happen to be upset with David Bakhtiari's penalties, but he leads the team in penalties, well, you live with the holding call every game in exchange for, you know, the play that he gives as opposed to what Don Barclay gave. I mean, he gave up several sacks. He was penalized, I think, three times. And I'm not sure if they were they each one of them declined or they were nullified, because it didn't matter. That there ended up being, like, you know, poor plays regardless. I know one of them, I think, was hands to the face on Don Barclay on the play that Aaron Rodgers threw the interception. So, of course, the Cardinals just accepted the interception. But, I mean, you know, Barclay was beaten routinely throughout the game, as was Josh Walker. And Josh Walker only was in there for, like, you know, 20-some snaps. Brian Bulaga exits with a knee injury. You pray to God that, you know, Brian Bulaga and David Bakhtiari are going to come back. But, you know, Josh Walker gives up, you know, I know he allows the strip sack, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back was at that point the Packers were like, we can't even keep Josh Walker, and here they went with J.C. Treader the rest of the way, and the rest is history. The Packers give up 8 sacks on the day, many of them due to the play of the tackles. The interior of the offensive line did a little bit better. Even there were times where, Josh Sitton ended up having the egregious penalty. Corey Linsley and TJ Lang both come out temporarily out of the game with injuries. But anyway, they stick with those guys, and it is what it is. Not a good showing from the Packers' offensive line in general, but especially from the tackle position. Jake Ryan, I thought, had a rough day. The Cardinals just simply exploiting a weakness they saw. Jake Ryan is not very, he's not supremely athletic, and I don't know how much fault that is of his. I mean, we are talking about a fourth round draft pick here. I think he's kind of a secondary piece. He's the kind of guy that I think could do well if he's, next to a three down inside linebacker. The Packers have sorely needed, they need now, and they've needed for years. And I don't know how they're going to get one, because there's a lot of other needs in the upcoming NFL draft. But regardless, Jake Ryan had missed tackles. He trailed in coverage. He had a rough game. He was not the only one. I mean, you could make the case that several guys deserved cow chips for their performance on Sunday. James Starks having his fourth fumble in 4 games. Julius Peppers for being, a missing man, for being absent, invisible, whatever you want to say. Davante Adams for his drop near the goal line. Even Aaron Rodgers. It's hard to fault him when you get sacked 8 times, but even, when he wasn't being sacked, there were some not good choices, such as on the interception, and the ball security was not very good either. So, none of those guys, there were no shortage of cow chip candidates from this Packers team. And that leads us into our next segment.
The day ahead.
Keep this short and brief, because I don't even know what the Packers have planned. As of right now, I checked their website. Mike McCarthy holds a press conference, a day after game press conference, all the time. But the team has not published yet what time it will take place. I'm assuming it'll take place around 5, 6 p.m. or so, maybe between 4 and 6, as usually is the case, especially when they're coming back from a road game. But they've not published that on their team website, so still kind of waiting for, kind of this aftermath press conference from Mike McCarthy and the coordinators to speak, and we'll see where the Packers go from here. It's talk show day. The day after a game is always the talk show circuit, so you can watch any number of Packers players as guests on shows like Inside the Huddle and The Fifth Quarter and things like that. I'll try to round that up at 24/7 Sports for you in our Packers calendar post. So look out for that. That'll do it for today's show. I wish it was under better circumstances, folks. I know it's kind of a depressing one with a loss, drug allegations on top of that. Not exactly fun stuff if you're a Packers fan to talk about. Your silver lining, you want something to look forward to. Packers playing for the NFC North division title on Sunday. They can capture that for, I believe, would be a fifth consecutive year if they end up winning. And you can feel good about that, at least temporarily. I'm not sure where the Packers go in the playoffs. I don't have a very good feeling that they're going to go far in the playoffs. But enjoy it for what it is. Next week, hopefully, we're talking about a division crown if you're a Packers fan. And you can bask in that for a day at least before you get back to reality and the impending playoffs and the doom that might come then. But hey, we'll take it for what it is. We'll see you, folks. Have a good day. My call to action, as always, if you would, we'd love it if you gave us a rating on iTunes. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. and would really appreciate it if you would give us a rating and review on iTunes. Just go search Cheesehead TV. It'll take you right to us. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Simple Gift of Man by Brothers Past on Psi Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack Go.